This is the 2024 Manitoulin Family Bible Camp. Our speaker this evening is our brother Stephen Hornhart from Salisbury, Adelaide, Australia. His subject is Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. Brother Stephen.
Well, good evening, brethren and sisters, young people and children. Very nice to be with you this evening. What a beautiful day we've had. Fed on the word of life this morning, lovely fraternising together in sweet fellowship, seeing the children joyful, smiles on their faces. What a delight and privilege we really have. And I'm sure all of you appreciate far more than I do this beautiful environment, those of you who have been coming here for many, many years. Nice to share this evening with you. And as our brother has said, our title for this evening is Fearfully Made, Wonderful Are Thy Works. And we've taken that title from Psalm 139 and verse 14. Now, we could do a lot of things with a title like that. We could look at a lot of examples as far as the creation of God. But what we want to do this evening is we want to have a look at what makes a good listener. And then we want to look at an example in the Bible of a wonderful listener to God. And then we want to have a look at the mechanism, the apparatus that God has given us to listen with. That is the marvel of the ear. Now, some of you young people might be in school and you might be saying, oh, Uncle Steve, you're going to talk about the hammer and the anvil and the little stapes or the stirrup. Yes, a little bit about that. But we're going to go much, much further inside the ear and see the amazing way God has put this together. And our responsibility is to use that mechanism wisely. So that's going to be our journey this evening. And before we start really our journey together, just a quotation that I think many of us would be very aware of. And we take the quotation from Proverbs 20 and verse 12. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, Yahweh has made them both. And we look at that and go, yes, amazing is the ear and amazing is the eye. However, there is a moral constraint. There's a moral responsibility that goes with the wonder of those verses. As we spill into Psalm 94 and verse 9, coupling that with the Proverbs reading, he that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? So with all the wonder of what we have here, and the wonder of what we have here, remember, as marvellous as these things are, God made them. And how well can he see? And how well can he hear those things that we do and say publicly and in secret? All right. Now, we've got another number of young people in the audience this evening, and we've got some children. So all of those young people, children, who are, well, under the age of 12. Who's under 12 years of age? Put your hand up. We've got a lot of under 12 years of age people. Fantastic. All right. Uncle Steve's going to ask you a question. Who in the Bible do you think was a wonderful listener? Who comes to mind who really listened to God? Anyone like to know or tell me who they think it might be? There could be a couple of examples. Who do you think was a really wonderful listener in the Bible? And what's your name? Louder, I can't hear you. Elijah. So, Elijah, you said that you think one of the wonderful listeners in the Bible was Samuel. Well done, Elijah. Did you come up with that example, Elijah, on your own, or did someone help you with that? Just okay. On your own, or did someone help you? Is that a Canadian expression of, yeah, on my own? Thank you very much, Elijah. Yes, Samuel is a wonderful, wonderful example of a listener in the Bible. In fact, Samuel comes into... Darling, yes. Who? Peter was a good... Yes, he was. So you've got one in the New Testament and we've got one in the Old Testament. Thank you. What's your name? You have to be very loud because Uncle Steve... Tikva. Is that correct? Tikva? Thank you, Tikva. Peter. And thank you, Elijah. Samuel. Very well done. I haven't really got much prepared on Peter being a good listener, but we will do that on another night. Okay? If they give me another night, we'll do something on Peter. Okay, Tikva? Yes, okay, she says. All right. Samuel, brothers and sisters, thank you, Elijah, for that. Samuel comes into the record, and five times the stamp of his character is clearly laid for us. Here am I. God speaks. I'm here. Here am I. Five times in the record, the stamp of this boy is he was listening to God. Now, here's a question. If Samuel, the little boy, the 12-year-old boy, if he could hear God so clearly, why could not Eli, the high priest, hear God? I mean, they're both in the tabernacle. They're both there in close proximity to each other. Why could not Eli, the high priest, hear God when Samuel could? Well, you know the answer, brothers and sisters, young people, children, the answer is here. And the answer is in 1 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 2. And we read these words. And it came to pass at that time when Eli was laid down in his place. Ah, so Eli had a place. Oh, but his place was a dark place. His place was a dim, shadowy place. And then we read the record with respect to Samuel in verse 3. And ere the lamp of God went out in the temple of Yahweh, where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep. So Eli's got a place, Samuel's got a place. But when you look at Rotherham's translation, the impact of the two different places becomes very, very, very clear. So Rotherham says this with respect to verse 3. Samuel was lying down in the temple of Yahweh, where was the ark of God. Now, of course, Samuel wasn't literally lying next to the ark, but Samuel had a place, and this really comes out when we have a look at verse 9 of 1 Samuel 3. Therefore Eli said unto Samuel, go lie down, and it shall be, if he call thee, that thou shalt say, speak, Yahweh, speak, for thy servant heareth thee. So Samuel went and laid down in his place. Now we're told there that he laid down in the proximity of the ark, but we're really told where Samuel was in the next sentence, in the next verse. Samuel went and laid down in his place, which was where? Yahweh came and stood right next to that boy. So Samuel's place was right next to God. God was right next to Samuel. And children and young people, the best way to listen to God is to be right next to him and have God stand right next to us. Not like Eli, dark, misty, shadowy, or fuzzy. Clearly, Samuel was right next to God. And do you know the sad thing about this? Is that Samuel comes into the record hearing five times. The sad thing is that Eli comes into the record doing the exact opposite. Just for a minute, brothers and sisters and young people, just turn over, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 1. Oh, this is awful. This is very sad. The mark of Samuel is listening, hearing. But the mark of Eli is the opposite. This is how Eli comes into the record. 1 Samuel 1, verses 12 through 14. And it came to pass, as Hannah continued praying before Yahweh, that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she was drunk. And Eli said to her, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. Brothers and sisters and young people, Eli got it totally wrong. Eli comes into the record making wrong judgments. Wrong judgments. Why? Because Eli could not hear the word. And that's how he comes into the record. He can't hear the words, and he's totally opposite to Samuel, who comes in the record, who could hear God. Speak, Yahweh. Speak, for thy servant heareth. What an amazing thing. What a lovely thing on Samuel's part, but what a tragic thing on the high priest's part. Well, brothers and sisters, young people, let's talk about now, having seen Samuel being a lovely example, standing right next to God and God right next to him, so they both heard each other really, really clearly. Now, here we have, a number of ears on that screen. So anybody under the age of, well, under the age of 14, we have a quotation up there, he that hath an ear, let him hear. So anyone under the 14, where does that come from? What quotation? What book of the Bible? He that hath an ear, let him hear. Yes, young man, what is your name? Who? Daniel. Is it Daniel? Okay, Daniel, where does that quotation come from? Where? Daniel? Where does it come from, Daniel? Where does that quotation come from? Which book of the Bible? Daniel? Now I know why you're named Daniel. Because you've got nothing else on your mind but Daniel. That's very good. Did I hear right? Did Daniel say Daniel? You're pretty close, Daniel. Pretty close. You're in the right book, like the Bible. All right. Right down the back there. Revelate. Well done. Revelation. He that hath an ear, let him hear. Okay, how many ears are on that screen? How many? Seven. Do you remember Uncle John last night was talking about the brain and making decisions? We make decisions sometimes, but we don't even know we've made those decisions yet until some things kick in. So how many ears are on there?
Nine.
Where did you get the nine from? Oh, so he that hath an ear, let him hear, and ear, and the ear, and the ear fully made. Well, so there was a few more than nine, but you were on the right track. Okay, so we have all of these. So somebody once said, many hear, but only some listen. We can't stop noise going into our ears unless we really block them off. But listening is with the mind, hearing is with the ear. But very good. So we have seven pictorial, seven representations of the ears, and we have those word ears up there. All right. Now, do you know, brothers and sisters and young people, a lot of research has been done on listening and hearing. And researchers have said that the average audience, let me have a look to see whether you look average. Yes, it's like an average audience out here. The average audience has a listening efficiency of around 25%. That means that we only remember a quarter of what we hear soon after we hear it. And researchers say that it's not uncommon for adults to have a listening efficiency as low as 12%. Now, I think Christadelphian audiences are better than that, because we have been trained and we appreciate and value listening to the Word of God. But 25%, 12%. And what researchers also say with respect to listening is that the average audience tunes in for only around 10 seconds in each minute, and they tune out for 50. So the average audience tunes in for 10, They're out for 50 on a mental holiday. They tune in for 10. Yes, Steve's still on the white horse. I'm going to go out until he comes back and changes the colour. So you tune in for 10 and then tune out for 50. So you're in and out, in and out. And sometimes those mental holidays, like you've gone to France, you've gone to Italy, you're doing the gardening, you're doing your next job, your hobby. Sometimes those mental holidays are so lovely, you go out and you never come back. Now, how do we do that? How are we able to tune in? Oh, yeah, I can pick it. I'm out again. I'm watching that person over there. I'm looking out the window, watching whatever wildlife is out there. How are we able to do that? Well, researchers also have told us that the average speaker speaks at about, you might find this strange for an Australian, but speaks about 120 words a minute. So I'm speaking at about 120 words a minute. But you, as an audience, every one of you in this audience has the ability to think speed at 1,000 words a minute. Now, I'm only speaking at 125. So I want to know what you are doing with your spare 800 and something words a minute. What are you doing with it? Are you checking out? Are you checking in? Or are you using that extra think speed to really focus and, shall we say, listen actively? So let's have a look now. That's what our researchers say. Let's have a look now, brothers and sisters and young people, at the ear itself and make sure that we, well, use this mechanism that God has given us wisely. Now, first up, we want to just very briefly talk about sound and the ear. Now, here I am speaking to you. Now, what is it? What's going from my mouth and magically leaping out and coming into your ear? Is there something flying magically through the air and magically coming in the auditory canal and tapping on the tympanic membrane on your eardrum? What's happening? For instance, if I do this, all of us heard that. But if I do that, I can hear that very clearly. But can you? You can. Then I want your ears. I really do. Now, what's happening, brothers and sisters, when I speak and when I do that, I'm creating shock waves or pressure waves. Something doesn't fly from my mouth and magically fly into your ear. In fact, things don't travel very far at all. So what's happening when I'm doing this or when I'm speaking? There are all of these molecules banging together, banging together, banging together. They don't move very far, they're just banging together. And the further they get out, the less impactive they are. It's a bit like throwing a stone in a pond. You get these very, very big ripples, and then as it goes out and goes out, the ripples diminish and you almost see nothing at all. So we're creating, when we speak, we're creating these pressure waves, these molecules banging together. And then they come in and they tap on the tympanic membrane or your eardrum. How sensitive, these little molecules, bang, 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 and then tap, tap, tap in there. How sensitive is our ear to these pressure waves, these shock waves? How sensitive? Well, when you do some research, I read this and I put this up here. The ear is sensitive to a change in pressure of 1 times 10 to the minus 10 atmospheres. I have no idea what that means. Does anyone under 10 know what that means? Because usually when I get problems with technology, I grab a 5-year-old and I ask them, how do you use this piece of equipment? Does anybody know what that means? Because I don't. One brother in the audience was a scuba diver and he said, yeah, Steve, it means this, that, and the other explained it to me, but really I wasn't very interested because I had no idea what he was talking about. So I thought what I might do, I might sort of trim this down a little bit and make it a bit more streamlined and a bit more understandable. So what I did, I thought, okay, the ear is sensitive to a change of pressure by 0.009091 atmospheres. I thought, that's better. I still had no idea what that means. So, what I thought I might do is try to simplify it a bit more. and bring it into the, well, to the realm of altitude. So the ear is sensitive, and it's comparable to changing altitude of less than 1/1000th of a millimetre. Brothers and sisters and young people, when our ears are raised in altitude 1/1000th of a millimetre, then your ear senses the change in pressure. Now, I looked around for something that was 1/1000th of a millimetre so that I could show you, but there's nothing you can see that's 1/1000th of a millimetre. So what I did was I grabbed a piece of paper. And this piece of paper is not 1/1000th of a millimetre. This piece of paper is 1/6th of a millimetre. So I'm going to do a little experiment. So I'm going to put this piece of paper on the ground, and this is my altitude elevator. So I am going to step up and change my altitude. And some of you out there will be thinking, Steve, you need more than a piece of paper, mate. Let me tell you. So I'm going to step up onto this piece of paper, and I'm going to change my altitude, and my ear is going to sense the difference. So give me a minute. Might take me a while to climb up on here. I'm not in as good condition as I used to be. All right, here we go. You know, the air is thinner up here, brothers and sisters. I feel sorry for you 6-foot-some brethren. You 6-foot brethren must be having very, very lots of difficulty in breathing up there. So my ear, stepping up onto this piece of paper, my ear has sensed the change in altitude. What an amazing piece of equipment God has given us. So brothers and sisters, the ear itself, as some of us would be aware, many of us would be aware, is made up of the outer, the middle, and the inner ear. Now these shock waves, these molecules that are bouncing together and finally coming into our ear and tapping on our eardrum, we have got to have sound travelling through air first, but the sound finally has got to travel through fluid. And there's a problem, because going through air and going through fluid, there's a different impedance. I mean, you might have children who are swimming in a swimming pool and they're underwater, swimming underwater, and you want to go home. And so there you are at the side of the pool and you're screaming out at the top of your voices saying, it's time to go home. But 99.9% of your sound bounces back from the fluid, from the water, a different impedance. So we've got to get sound travelling through air and then travelling through fluid. But what God has done is he's placed an interface of bone. So there's an interface between the air and the fluid. And not only is this an interface, but this is an amplifier. And then finally, the sound travels through the fluid. Now let's have a look at this outer ear. We have the auricle, that's this thing here, this floppy thing here, the auricle. And then we have the external auditory canal, and then we have the ceruminous gland. Now, the ceruminous gland is that gland inside the ear that produces earwax. So we're not going to talk a lot about earwax tonight. Just say a few little things about earwax. Let's just focus on the external auditory canal and the ceruminous gland and see the wondrous way that is made. Now, this little auditory canal here is about 25 millimetres long and 7 millimetres in diameter. And there are the ceruminous glands that secrete earwax. Now, why does your ear produce earwax? One reason is to keep bugs out. Bugs don't like the earwax. So it helps keep things from going inside your ear that you don't want in there. But the other reason why the earwax is produced is because this is a bit dark in here and it's a bit moist and a bit humid. So to preserve the little bits in here, particularly the eardrum, so it doesn't fall off and then fall out into your rice bubbles at breakfast time, to preserve that, brothers and sisters, God's made these little ceruminous glands so they produce earwax, noxious to insects, and it just stops things from, well, falling to bits inside. Now here's the thing. If your ears are producing earwax, How come your ears don't clog up? Because you know what happens. You know what happens when you exfoliate on our skin. The dermis, the upper dermis, the skin just grows up like that, and then it just falls off. You just brush it and bits of skin fall off. So it goes straight up on our body. But if that happened in our ear, like the skin just went up like that, got flaky, fell off, mixed up with the wax, you get all blocked ears. Some people do. They've got to have their ears syringed when it's not working properly. But what happens inside the ear, instead of the dermis going up like that, which it does on our body, inside the ear it's different. It doesn't grow up. Inside the ear, the dermis goes like that on an angle. And it acts like a conveyor belt inside the auditory canal. So God has designed a little conveyor. And what they've done with experiments, they've put little foreign bodies in there and they've actually watched them travel along the auditory canal and fall out the end of the ear. So God has allowed the wax and the skin to just be gently conveyed along until it pops out the auditory canal. What an amazing thing. Well, let's go in and have a look for a few moments at the interface, the amplifier. As sound comes in, it is amplified and then it travels through fluid. So here we are. We've got the eardrum. Now let's have a look at this. There's the tympanic membrane, the eardrum. And when the shock waves or molecules bang on there, then they cause the little hammer to move. And then that causes the little anvil to move, and that causes the little stirrup or the little stapes to go in and out, pushing fluid through the cochlea, through that fluid inside your inner ear. Now, brothers and sisters, young people, children, this little mechanism that's going like that really fast inside your ear, it's got to be lubricated. And there's a lubrication point there, and there's a lubrication point there. Now, I've had my ears for a long, long time. And I've never had to go to the garage. I've never had to go to the doctor to get those little joints in there lubricated. And I'm thinking, can man make something like that to last 70-odd years without any lubrication being done? And I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, when I was born, there was a car that was manufactured in Australia. And that car there is an FX Holden. That was made on the production line the same year that my ears were created by God. Now, if I've been on the planet for all this time and I have not had to have any lubrication done on my middle ear, then I figured that this car, to match that quality of the ear, would have to be going for 1.4 million kilometres without having any lubrication done at all. So there's no way that man can match what happens in our ear. Now, brothers and sisters, let's have a look now at the sensitivity of this eardrum. The eardrum has a sensitivity range of 1 million to one. What does that mean? That means that I can hear the screaming jet engine of an aeroplane. And I can also hear the gentle rustle of the leaves on a gentle breeze in a forest. That's the range. Now, you know, brothers and sisters and young people, think about this and think about the creation that God has given us. At 4 kilohertz, the eardrum responds to movements of 1/10 the diameter of a hydrogen atom. Do you know what that means? The eardrum is sensitive in movement to 1/10 the diameter of a hydrogen atom. What does that mean? Well, if you had a look at these atoms, you could actually put 100 million atoms side by side, stretching across your little fingernail. 100 million. And your eardrum is sensitive to a movement of 1/10 the diameter of a hydrogen atom. How sensitive is that? That is amazing. And there is the little stirrup inside your ear. And there is the little stirrup, the little stapes, the smallest bone in your body on the end of somebody's finger. What an amazing little thing. And this little stirrup, you want to see what it's got to do. It's going to go in, out, in, out, in, out, pushing fluid around this snail shell-like inner ear. Let's see what this little, tiniest bone in the body, let's see what it does inside of our ear. So let's now, brothers and sisters and young people, go way, way inside of our ears. And there is where the little stapes goes. The little bone, the little stirrup, it's sealed in there. So here is our bony-like structure. There are our balance little bones there, and there is the shell-like inner ear, the cochlea. So our little stapes fits in there and is sealed off, and it pushes in, out, sending fluid around through that little snail-like substance. Now here it is. If I get a bottle and fill up the bottle with water, right up to the top, and I put a cork in the top of the bottle, and I try to push the cork down and compress the water, I can't do it. I can compress air, but I can't compress the water. I need something at the bottom of the bottle that's got a flexible cup at the bottom. So if I push the cork in, this flexes down, and then it flexes up and the cork pops up. That's exactly what God created. God has created a little flexible membrane down there. So when the stapes pushes that in there, this little flexible membrane pops down there, allowing the stapes to go in and out. Well, let's do a cross-section. Let's do a cross-section of this little snail-like cochlea here. And there it is. Now, brothers and sisters and young people, if that looks complicated to you, it is. But I want to try and simplify it for you. This is a cross-section of that little snail-like shell, and there's all fluid running around here. So what happens is this. When the little stapes gets pushed in, fluid flies up here and goes around and around and around. And then the fluid comes back around, around and out. So the stapes goes in and the fluid goes zoom, zoom, zoom. The stapes goes in and the fluid goes back again. So here you got this inside. Now why does it do this? Why have we got this little stirrup being pushed in and this fluid flying around? What's the purpose of it? Well, the purpose is locked in the little triangle section in here. Let's go inside there and have a look at why fluid's running around and fluid's coming back. What's the point? Well, let's go in there and have a look. Let's explode that. Let's magnify it. Now, there we are. Here's the fluid going in, and there's the fluid coming out. There's the fluid going in, and there's the fluid coming back around again. What is it doing? Well, when the fluid goes in, brothers and sisters, young people, there's a little triangular section in here that's all sealed off. And there's a different kind of fluid in here to what's in here. So when this fluid comes in and comes in and comes out, spinning around, what it's doing, it's pushing pressure there and it's pushing pressure there. It's bouncing there and bouncing there, bouncing there and bouncing there as the fluid goes spinning around. What's that doing? Well, let's go inside here and magnify it. So we go in there. There's your chamber. Fluid coming in, fluid coming out. Pressure goes on there. Now let's go inside here and see what's going on in this little sealed section as to why fluid goes in here and comes out there. Putting pressure there, making this bounce and making that bounce. What's going on in here? Let's magnify it. There it is. So here's this little triangular sealed chamber with its own fluid. And what you've got here is a series of cells that send electronic signals to the brain, which are interpreted as speech. But what you've got is you've got this tectorial membrane here in purple or lavender, and you've got these little, little hairs that are along there. And these little hairs or silica stick into this tectorial membrane. Now look, here's my hand here. This is the purple bit, and it's fixed. My fist is the green bit. I put my hand on here and this is fixed. This is the purple bit. And as the fluid spins around, pushes here, pushes there, pushes there, pushes there, what's happening is it's bouncing like that. And as it's bouncing, it's causing those little silicas or those little hairs that are kind of like impregnated into that lavender, that tectorial membrane, it's causing them to rub back and forth on that tectorial membrane. What is that doing? Well, let's go in and have a real close look at the top of these hairs or silica and see what's going on. Let's blow that up. Well, there's the top of the hair. Let's have a closer look. There's the top of the hair. Let's have a closer look. Brothers and sisters, at the top of these little hairs are these little gates and little molecular springs. And these little gates, when the hair bends, they open on top of the hair. And when they do, they allow electrically charged particles to enter in, which change the electric charge inside the cell. And these little gates on top of the hair, when the fluid is going around and around and around, and it's going like that, these little gates have to open and close at a rate equal to our highest level of hearing, which is 20,000 times a second. Don't tell me ever that we evolved, we say to the people in the world. No way. 20,000 times a second, these little gates are opening, closing, opening, closing, opening, closing with a molecular spring. Brothers and sisters, you give somebody Einstein's brain squared and get them to explain to you how evolution ever came up with a molecular spring. Ask the evolutionist how they would go about making this molecular spring that opens and closes a gate at 20,000 times a second to let ions in to create an electrical charge that goes to the brain, which is then interpreted as sound and then understood as speech. What an amazing apparatus we have. Could we have evolved? Now, I'm going to do a little experiment with one or two of the children now. Evolutionists have told us in days gone by that atoms formed into tiny molecules known as amino acids. And they then formed into polypeptides, which then formed into protein molecules, which then interacted somehow to form a singular cell. Well, you know, brothers and sisters, young people, children, what are the chances of one protein molecule coming into existence? Now, let's do a little experiment to look at this chance, the probability of one protein molecule coming into existence by chance. Now, I've got a bag here, children. I've got a bag here. No lollies, not like last night. We're not throwing out lollies. I have got money in here because I threw money out to you, but it's probably no good to you because it's Australian money anyway. I've got in my bag here 10 cent coins. 10 coins. And each one of these coins is numbered 1 to 10. Now, I'm going to come up to somebody in a minute. And I'm going to get them to put their hand in the bag. And I'm going to get them to pull out one of these coins. Now, what are the chances of somebody putting their hand in the bag? What's the probability of pulling out number one first up? What are the chances? One in? I can't hear you. One in 10, indeed. So we need somebody to volunteer to put their hand in the bag. Well, you money lovers, you want to pinch my coins? Who? I'll give you a couple of goes. So right at the back there, I'll come down here. Okay, the chance, they're pretty good odds. They're pretty good odds. You've got pretty good odds. I'm going to come back here. So what's your name, darling? What? Gina?
Shayna.
Shayna. Sheena? Shayna? Shayna. Shayna. How do you spell that, Shayna?
S-H-A-I-N-A.
S-H-A-I-N-A. Okay. Still don't know how to pronounce it, but there you go. Okay, Shayna. You got 1 in 10 chance. I've got to tell you this. Nobody has ever, ever pulled out number one first up. You have a chance to make a name for yourself. Okay. You need number one. I'm shaking it around. Here we go. Okay, Shayna. Let's have number one. Number? Number nine. Okay, Shayna, we'll give you one more chance because you are in Canada after all. I'll give Shayna one more chance. I'll come over there in a minute. Okay, Shayna, one more chance. We need number one. You've got 1 in 10 chance of doing...
Three.
We're getting close. Number three. Never trust an Australian, eh? Oh, mate. Tell you what, I've got all bases covered. Absolutely, no problems at all. Okay. Now here's it. What? I'm coming. Now here's an opportunity. I'm coming. I need 10 bags by the look of it. Now, so 1 in 10 chance. Now, what are the chances of somebody putting their hand in the bag, taking out number one, putting it back, shaking the bag, and then taking out consecutively number two? What are the chances? 1 in 100. The odds have really gone up. Okay, we need somebody to put their hand in the bag, pulling out number one, and then throwing it back in the bag and pulling out number two. Pick me. I've taken from this block over here. I better go over here because I'll have a ride on my hands from this side of the room. Okay, you got 1 in 100 chance, but you've got to get one first. What's your name?
Amelia.
Who?
Amelia.
Hello, Amelia. Well, the ameliorating effects of this exercise are thus. Okay, Amelia, number one, got to get it first before we throw it back in the bag and then get number two. Number one, nobody has ever done this. Number?
Seven.
Who?
Seven.
Well, seven's a good number, but it's not the one we want. Okay, one more, Amelia, one more. We need number one, then we need number two. Who?
Ten.
Oh, we're going backwards. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Amelia. Thank you very much. Okay, so that was an opportunity to do a 1 in 100. Now, brothers and sisters, young people, what are the chances of somebody putting their hand in the bag, taking out number one, putting it back, taking out number two, putting it back, taking out number three, putting it back, number four, all the way to 10? What are the chances? What's the probability? 1 in... How did you know that? How did you... 1 in 10 billion. That's correct. How did you... You didn't even think about that. Are you a mathematician, a science, an astronaut or something? I expect... Where's John? Where's he talking about the brain last night? He said, we've got to think before he said... How could you say that? Absolutely brilliant. 1 in 10 billion. So the chances of putting your hand in the bag, 1, 2, 3... is this 1 in 10 billion. But the chances of one protein molecule happening by chance is this. That is, brothers and sisters, 321 zeros. Oh, we have been wonderfully, fearfully made by our Heavenly Father. So, brothers and sisters, we've got lots to be thankful for, and thank you this evening for participating in our activities.